to the Jock X podcast. This is episode 23. My name is Jock, and today, special guest we have on this episode is Pip Mackay. Now, Pip is based out of Sydney, and she is one of the most respected coaches and trainers in the field of personal transformation, having pioneered revolutionary techniques in coaching and personal development. Now, these include matrix therapies, coaching, passion and purpose, and masculine and feminine coaching, along with the entire field of archetype coaching. And I was super happy to have her on because we got to share some of these amazing things and breakthroughs that she's come across throughout her 15, 20 years in the field. And we really dive right in and get a heap of good stuff out of there for you guys listening to take your game to the next level. And that's what it's all about for me doing this. This is what I do episode each week for you guys listening to really grab a hold of this stuff. And these people are amazing guests that we get on and really chat and bring about all this cool information for free for you guys to really step it up in your own game and your own goals, whether it be in sport, whether it be in business, whether it be in education or any other type of area. This is stuff is for you. So really enjoy this episode. It is an absolute ripper. And I think it's one of those ones where I just know I have to get Pip back on the show because it's so good and we could talk for hours, but we kept it to, you know, under an hour for you guys to really grab a hold of. So guys, as always, I really want to do a shout out to everyone out there again who's, you know, sharing this on, who's passing it on to their friends, you know, through Twitter, Facebook, you know, Instagram, all those types of things, and really letting people know about this because people like Pip really change lives and make, you know, massive difference. So you guys passing it on, I thank you and I appreciate you. And again, if this is your first time listening, welcome. I'm excited that you're here and you've really jumped on board for a great episode having the amazing Pip Mackay with us today. So guys, sit back and listen, whether you're stuck in traffic right now or whether you're sitting there lifting a bit of weights at the gym or going for a walk or you're simply cooking in your kitchen. Enjoy this one, episode 23 with myself, Jock, and Pip Mackay on the Jock X podcast show. So welcome, Pip.
Thanks, James.
Fantastic. Yeah, for sure. It's fantastic to have you on. I'm really excited, and I think everyone today is going to love what you have to say. So people would like to start off with a bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, well, I actually started off as a drama teacher. So that was how I started. And the interesting thing about drama is that there's a lot of personal development because people are really looking at human psychology so that they can enter into the world of somebody else. And partway through that, I had my own little business teaching acting classes. And this person came and headhunted me. And I had a background in education. I'd been a teacher of English as well. And anyway, he wanted me to set up Accelerated Learning Worldwide as his company and do all the syllabus, which is what I did. And I had a vision that I really wanted to combine personal development with the skills that I knew from acting, because there didn't seem to be much of a crossover. So I started learning about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and that's a communication style and a way of looking at mindset. And I started to combine that with my acting skills to make it more interesting and entertaining. And then I just started teaching that. And as I went through that, I realized that there were what I saw as gaps for people, particularly on the deeper emotions like grief. And so when I was working with a client, I sort of just spontaneously followed the client and looked at helping them overcome a big death in the family. And that started my own techniques, which are called matrix therapies. And that's how it started. And then I started to realize that a lot of the negative thought patterns and emotions that people have, they've kind of picked up from parental programming. But they don't want to do years and years of psychology. They want to find a faster technique that helps them get rid of a whole conglomeration of influence that they've picked up from their parents. And a lot of people don't realize what they've picked up from their parents, but sometimes people's odd attitude to money or in relationships they find themselves doing something bizarre, and it's because of an internal conflict between what they want and the programming that they've got from the past. And so I started creating my own techniques, and I started to use those in coaching, and then I started to teach those, and now it's 14 years later and those techniques have been taught all around the world, and just recently opened up in Israel. So it's pretty exciting to have one of your techniques being taught in Israel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I just created a greater suite of programs. So it was, to begin with, it was all about clearing away mindset blocks, negative emotions and influences, and even influences from ex-partners on relationships and all sorts of other things, and influences from the past on business. And then I started to see that people also needed to know what their passion and purpose was. So I'd had a long apprenticeship in archetypes, which are sort of universal patterns. And I decided to start using that to help people find their passion and purpose. So basically, my techniques all center around clearing away the blocks and finding passion and purpose. And that's pretty much it. And that's what I do full time now.
So you're based out of up in Sydney there, aren't you?
Manly.
Nice spot. Yeah. I just want to touch back on, I really love to sort of start this conversation delving into sort of parental programming, as you mentioned it, and how that really influences us, particularly I guess as adults, as you grow on, and how that influences your behavior and actions on a daily basis.
Yeah. You know, it was really interesting because I was reminded of this really recently when I was with my godson, and my fiance, he said something to my godson's sister. He said something like, "Okay, I'm coming," like this as a joke. And I watched this little boy, he's only five, and under his breath he's repeating, "Okay, I'm coming," and he repeated it four or five times. And I thought, whoa, there it is, that imprint period from 0 to 7, when we're kind of a bit like a sponge and we just soak up the habits of what other people are doing, and we don't even understand. Like, the five-year-old didn't understand that that was a joke. He saw that as, here is a male figure in his life, and I'm going to repeat this way of answering someone as if I'm not enthusiastic to spend time with them. And my partner was like, "Oh, I can't believe I said that." But it's just interesting how kids pick this up, and then it just sits in the background of their subconscious mind. And it might be that, say, your parents were workers and they never set up their own business. And really, they didn't set it up because they were afraid. They felt like they needed to stay stable in a job. And then, say, you want to set up your own business. You know, you're consciously, you're going ahead, setting up your own business. But unconsciously, there may be a fear that is sort of sabotaging you starting that business, making you feel like, "Oh, I don't know whether it'll be successful." And that can really be affecting us, and affecting us in all sorts of ways, let alone if our parents, you know, were arguing a lot in front of us, the way that that might affect how we relate in relationships. And then also the way that we turn up in terms of masculinity and femininity can be very much based on our parents. So I see a lot of corporate women who are like, "Oh, my mother was at home, she was powerless, she was weak, my father was very dominant, and I don't want to be like my mother, so I'm going to pick up the behavioural patterns of my father." And then they find that they are always in their masculine energy and they can't be receptive, they can't be softer or more feminine because they think they'll turn into their mother. So basically, there's four ways we respond to our parental programming. One is to adopt it, like that little boy was adopting my partner's behavior. The second one is to rebel against it, and that's where we vow we will never be like someone. And even though that sounds like we're not being influenced, in fact, we are, because if we want to do some behavior that is a little bit like one of our parents, then we find we can't because we have to rebel against them. So instead of just being our authentic self and knowing that sometimes that's going to be like our parents and sometimes it's not, we're sort of looking behind us and making sure we never do anything like our parents. So, you know, if that one of our parents is very organized and we found that really stifling, we might find that in our business, then we can't be organized because we feel that affects our creativity. And then there can be a whole lot of things that don't allow us to be successful because we're not setting up systems, for an example. And then the other way we relate to our parents is to compensate. So say one of our parents is very weak, we might be overly strong to try and compensate. Or if one of our parents was very dominant, we might let our staff get away with murder because we don't want to come across as dominant like one of our parents. And then the final way is to just escape. So to really be escaping from, say, any responsibility. So say we saw our parents and they were married and we saw, I don't know, both of our parents going out to work and having to be really responsible to bring up kids. That might affect us feeling like we want to get into a relationship and have children. And look, if we don't want to be in a relationship and we don't want to have children, that's totally fine. But it's a bit sad if wanting to escape from the way our parents is stopping us doing something that might be truly fulfilling in our lives.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So in the way people, I guess, take on sort of parental habits and behaviours is they obviously adopt it, rebel it. You mentioned there was there a couple of more ways you...
Yeah, compensating and escaping. Compensating. Yeah,
so in terms of people listening to this right now, and if they sort of sit back and sort of think about how this relates to them, what are sort of a few ways that people can become aware of how they are reacting in regards to their parental programming? And I guess from that, ways you can look at improving yourself and taking yourself forward in a more positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. So the main thing is any time you see something that is incongruent, so say you want to set a goal, but you don't seem to be taking action towards that goal. Well, what might be holding you back? It's really interesting to think about, you know, what's going on here? What is it that I want, but I'm not taking action towards that? So that's irrational. So anytime something is irrational, we know that it's sitting in the unconscious mind. It will have a logic, but that logic isn't necessarily a rational logic. So, you know, if we can sort of trace that back and sort of like go, oh, well, what was my parents' relationship to business, or what was my parents' relationship to money, or my parents' relationship to health, or my parents' relationship to love? Have a little look at that and see whether the goal that you are going for, that your parents were doing something that was a bit negative or destructive in that way. So, you know, my partner, he grew up in a family where nobody said, I love you. Nobody ever said that. And so when we met, it was something that he didn't find easy to say. So he felt it, but he didn't find it easy to say. So that's irrational. You know, if you feel love, but you feel you can't say it, then that's an odd thing. And then it was interesting for him to go, oh, well, hang on a minute. This was my whole parental background. You know, he didn't say I love you to his dad. And his dad didn't say it back until just about his dad was going to die. And that's when he said it. So, you know, and he was so happy he got to say that to his dad before he died. So it's really interesting to sort of look at that. So if you're setting a goal and you're not taking action towards it, it might be worth having a look at your parents' relationship to that goal. Or if you feel like you are moving towards a goal and then suddenly you sabotage your success, so say, you know, you've got a money goal, and then just when you're about to achieve it, so you are taking action towards it, but just when you're about to achieve it, you find yourself slackening off or sabotaging it some way, or suddenly really spending up big on something that's not really moving you towards your business. That's the moment to have a little look at what is my parents' relationship to these things. So I like to just look at areas of your life. And so, you know, you can even just get a pen and paper out and go, okay, what was my parents' relationship to money? What was their relationship to their career? What was their relationship to each other and to love? And what was their relationship to their health? So those are the big areas, and just sort of looking at that can really make you go, whoa, hang on a minute, I can see why I might be doing this. And then in terms of clearing it, you know, obviously we have a whole process that you do to clear it, but even just doing something simple like, you know, just taking out a piece of paper and maybe writing a letter to your parents going, look, I get that, you know, you grew up in a family that had no money, and so you had to take no risks along money because you need to be responsible to your family. But the fact is, you know, I live in a different era. You know, I don't have those financial constraints and I really want to do something differently. And then just writing out that letter and then just doing a little ritual like burning it or you know, ripping that up into little pieces and just sort of saying, look, that is not me. And then just writing out, you know, what is my relationship to money? What is my circumstances? And, you know, what do I want to do about moving forward with this? So often in the unconscious mind, just the fact that you are consciously aware that this pattern has nothing to do with you, has nothing to do with your survival, it has nothing to do with you moving forward in where you want. It's to do with somebody else in another set of circumstances, in another period of time, and that's not relevant to now. Sometimes even just a process like that and some sort of little ritual, because the unconscious mind is very symbolic. So the unconscious mind likes to move forward to do more with what you do rather than what you say. So any little ritual, like you rip it up and say, you know, that's not me, or you burn it, is very powerful for the unconscious mind. I know my partner and I just recently got engaged, and, you know, he got down on one knee and gave me a ring. And it was really interesting how powerful that was as a ritual and how much closer the two of us have become since that ritual is there, because it really speaks to the deepest part of us. And so, yeah, it's really good to think about rituals in our life and how that enforces what we want to do rather than just saying something. If we want to set a goal, having a sense of stepping into that goal, seeing, hearing, feeling it, and having a ritual of maybe putting that into our future. Just really simple visualizations or physical movement can make a really big difference.
Yeah, I really love that. And I'm a really huge believer on through these episodes and really talking about the habits that you have, the rituals that you do on a daily basis, and bringing about the results that you really want. I'd really love to touch on an area you sort of brought up a little bit in terms of parental programming towards money, and how that's, I think I said a lot, and I know you'll have a lot of stories in regards to how that's holding people back. If you could just, you know, explain a bit further, and people listening are really going to go, oh, wow, that's probably me and something I could really look into.
Totally. Well, you know, one of the things I find really interesting, and a lot of people in Australia aren't really aware of it, because we appear to be in a classless society. But in fact, class and the class we were born into, and the hereditary class our parents were a part of, really affects relationships with money. So for instance, if you were born into a lower class family, or there's a hereditary lower class, there's a real sense of really wanting to move away from poverty. And often there's a sense of also, because often lower classes are kind of proud of the fact that they're not a part of the middle class or the upper class. So there's this sense of not being allowed to move out of your class in the lower classes. So people, you know, they want to come out of poverty, but you can only come out of poverty by working really hard and doing a lot of manual things. And there's almost a sense of using your mind is a bit posh and you shouldn't do that. So people who've come from a background of lower class, there's often a lot of subconscious concepts holding them back that are about their class, and obviously the class that your parents were brought up in. So a lot of people come, you know, here from different areas, whether that's Europe or Asia or you know, or the United Kingdom or whatever. And in those areas, all of those areas, there's a lot of bigger emphasis on class, and those can be sitting in the unconscious mind. So if you find that, you know, you're working harder rather than smarter, and that you know that you should be setting up systems, but there's a resistance to that, you know, it may be to do with that class, that lower class upbringing. Then the second class is, you know, the middle classes. And the middle classes have a really interesting attitude towards money. So they don't want to be the upper class because they consider the upper class to be lazy, but they don't want to be the lower class either. So that they have this concept of, I'm allowed to have a lot of money if I work really hard for it, and I never relax when I make it. So I watch a lot of people have this busyness structure where they have to be busy all the time. They're never allowed to take time off. And part of this is actually this middle class thing where, you know, you're almost damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, you're not allowed to be upper class, so you're not allowed to just make it and relax, even though that's what they think they want. There's almost a programming stopping that because you're not allowed ever to be lazy. And that's the big programming of the middle class, never allowed to rest, never allowed to be lazy. And so what that means is when we're busy all the time, there comes a point where we're tired and we can't strategize, we can't see the big picture because we have to be busy, and that busyness is holding us in the detail all the time. But we have to work really hard to make sure we're not poor. So, you know, that's a real piece of programming that most people in business have, is this middle class programming. And then there's upper class programming. This is really interesting because the upper classes didn't have to work to make their money. And so what they feel is, do you know what? I should never have to do anything I don't want to do to make money. People should just know I'm here. I should never have to market. People should just know who I am. And, you know, it's really interesting in my family background because my dad, he came from the upper classes, and there was a sense when, you know, that it's the old boys club, that he should just get a job through the old boys club. And when he came to Australia, there was no old boys club and he couldn't get work. And he just didn't know then how to get work. He just didn't know how to sell himself, how to market himself, how to go for a job interview. And he was older at that time and he simply retired. Whereas my mum, she came from a middle class farming background. And it was just like, you just got to, she said it one time, you've got to work like a rat. That's what she said.
Yeah, yeah.
To make money and, you know, to look after your family, and, you know, you can never rest. And, you know, in the end, she had very high blood pressure because when Dad couldn't get work, she took over the whole work ethic in the family, and she was renovating the house and she was working really hard and she was looking after the family, and it was really huge. And, you know, in the end, you know, now, you know, she's 80 and she's an amazing woman and she's achieved a lot of stuff, but she's also got kidney disease that came from high blood pressure, you know, which is stopping her from really enjoying, you know, these years of her life in a way that she could. So, you know, sometimes we can get success, but we can be sacrificing something really important. So, yeah, so these are some things, and it's really interesting. In Australia, it's almost like you're not allowed to talk about class, but in terms of us moving forward and getting what we want, it's really important to be aware of what class our family background is from and how that might be affecting the way we relate to success.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there's so many people out there right now thinking, wow, you know, looking back at their parents and their parents' parents, and really relating that to right now and thinking about themselves. I just really want to, I love you talk about how middle class and how they always just want to work and really, you know, working as much as they can. And I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss. I don't know if you know Tim.
Yeah, I love Tim Ferriss.
Stuff. Yeah. And yeah, he talks a lot about how, you know, just working for the sake of working is a form of laziness. And
yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I find that whole philosophy sort of fascinating and something that in today's day and age, so many people really, A, don't know about, and B, sort of probably don't understand in terms of being productive. So it's interesting that you sort of mentioned that for the middle class, and I can definitely see a lot of that. And the other thing I want to touch on is with in regards to sort of the lower class was, I think it's fascinating. I think there was a stat, I can't remember exactly the stat, but from people who are, you know, immigrants in particular come across and were in a low class when they come across, I think they're about 80% more likely to become millionaires or something along those lines. It's an amazing stat. And I think it really goes back to their, you know, how you said they really want to get away from what they were brought up with and really, you know, live a life that they never had as a child. So that really...
Absolutely. I think what's so interesting is that they almost have to escape from the background they were in to feel like they can do that. Because, you know, one of the interesting things is if they were at home, there'd be a bit of a tall poppy syndrome. You know, if they tried to make more, there'd be kind of a sense of, no, you shouldn't be allowed to. But if you move away to another country, it's almost like you need to just justify the fact that you, you know, can justify the reason why you moved, and also this sense of, do you know what, I'm free. I'm free from that background, and now I'm free. I'm really going to show people back at home that I made the right decision and that, you know, I can make it here at home and I'm a self-made person, which I think is really, you know, extremely powerful.
For sure. And I'd actually just like to see your comment there on the sort of tall poppy syndrome. Like, now for all the listeners, we have quite a number across in the States and across in Europe now, and sort of it is an Australian term. If you could explain that, and more in regards to how that is holding people back, and then I guess from that, ways that people can really avoid that, because you and me both know here in Australia, it is a big mindset challenge that people face on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I like, in NLP there's a saying and it says, all meaning is context dependent. So, you know, basically if I said no, the meaning is context dependent to the nonverbal. Whereas if I said no, the meaning again is context dependent to the nonverbal there. But a lot of the way we respond to things is important in its historic context. And once we can understand the historic context, we can really loosen the way we respond to things. So in Australia, you know, we were a convict society. So there was a whole lot of people coming here who were convicts. And then there were the toffs, which were the people who put down the convicts and the people who suppressed them. And then there were the free settlers. And the free settlers were usually of a higher class and they often used convict labour. And there was a terrible treatment of the convicts. So then there became, because the majority of people were the convicts, there became this sort of sense of, well, you know, the convicts is the best thing. We're the noble ones. We're the ones who came here out of poverty and we're the ones who built Australia. So if you are that majority and then you start to make more money than your mates, then you're starting to become a toff, or a, you know, which is a really old fashioned term of, you know, an upper class or a free settler or whatever. And don't do that, because then you're going to become this nasty person who treats people badly and takes advantage of people. And this is where this tall poppy syndrome has come from. It's this idea of getting higher or better or richer than your mates. And that we in Australia want to believe that we're an egalitarian society, so we all want to be equal. And, you know, I think the point is that we are all equal in our potential, because we do live in the most extraordinary society, and I think we need to remember how amazing it is to live in Australia. And the thing is that our potential is all equal, but of course what we do with that potential is dependent on us, and that if we are the ones who you know, put more thought in, put more strategy in, or put more commitment in, then yes, of course we should be rewarded more for what we do. And move away from this tall poppy syndrome. And I think a lot of people, they're afraid that if they become richer, that helps with their significance, because they feel like, oh, you know, people will look up to me because I've got more money. But it takes away their love and connection, because they feel like their friends will be jealous of them and try and rip them down. And so I think there's a really important concept of looking at what friendship and love and connection really means. And that if you have friends who aren't going to love you anymore because you get richer, or if you have people you know who are going to try and take advantage of you because you've put the time and effort and energy and thought into becoming richer, well, then they're not really your friends. And that, you know, becoming successful or more successful is a real filter for discovering who your real friends are and who they're not. If you have true friends, they're going to be happy for your success, and they're going to see that as an inspiration for them to be also become more successful, and so that you're doing your true friends a favor by really fulfilling your passion and purpose and fulfilling your potential. And if anyone wants to rip you down for that, well, then that's a great filter to say they're not really your friends.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess from there, you would probably recommend people sort of obviously move away from those people that are having a sort of negative impact on you, and really just focusing on the people who are, you know, nurturing and helping you go forward.
Well, the way I think of it is make your new friends first, because one of the easiest ways to move back into an old pattern is to feel lonely and isolated, you know. So if you get rid of all your friends and then suddenly you don't have any new friends,
yes,
you know, when you feel lonely or you've got a problem, you want to talk to someone, you're going to go back to those old friends. So what I always say to people is establish new friendships first. And then, you know, your old friendships will just sort of slowly drop by the wayside. You know, and then you usually don't have to have those not easy conversations with someone and break up a friendship, which can be quite traumatic. It's easier just to, you know, just kind of stop watering that plant.
I kind of like that because I think a lot of people, particularly in the space that we sort of work in and people who are really successful would have challenges with this because a lot of those relationships do go over a number of years. So definitely a good tip in getting those new relationships first and then sort of, like you said, just sort of slowly move away and move towards more time spent with them.
The thing is the old friendships, you know, shouldn't disappear. I always say to people, are you the influencing factor or are you the influenced factor? So, you know, there comes a point in when you first start to become successful where, you know, other people's opinions can bring you back down and you're influenced by those other people. But there comes a point in business where you become the influencing factor, where you can hang around with anybody, no matter how negative, and you actually have an impact on them. They don't have an impact on you. And so, you know, it's just sort of looking at how cemented and how strong is my change. And if you feel it's strong, then you become the influencing factor of others, and that's when you can really assist and help other people. But if that particular change isn't very strong, then it's really important to hang with the right people. So, you know, if you're changing a habit like drinking, for instance, you know, there comes a point where you really do need to hang around some people who don't drink.
Yeah.
Because it's too easy to fall into temptation. But there comes a point where you just would never want to do that to yourself, you know, do any binge drinking to yourself because you just feel so bad afterwards and it takes away where you're going and what you're doing. And then you can hang around people who are drinking and you just sit there and you watch them and you're drinking your soda. And if they, you know, tease you about it, you just don't care because you know what amazing impact looking after your body has on you. So, I mean, I got glandular fever when I was 19 and I was very sick with that and I simply could not drink. And, you know, all my friends drank at that time. So if I didn't hang with people who were drinking, I had no social life. And I just, you know, I just realised, you know, it's not a very big deal. You just drink, you know, you just drink a bitters, lime and soda.
Yep.
And you ask them to put it in an alcoholic glass. just drink that, and nobody, you know, nobody cares. And I just watched the way people behave as they got drunk and I was just like, oh man, I don't need that, you know. And now just about all of my friends don't drink, and it's really interesting, but it made no difference to me. I could hang out with people and I didn't feel affected at all.
Yeah, for sure. It's actually interesting. I actually rarely drink much anymore myself, and I do. So you do go to those, you know, birthday parties in the evening and that, and after a while, you do get the point where you're very happy just to have a Coke or a juice or whatever it is, and you can just sort of carry on. But I think that does take time. I think it does take the sort of strength, and people sort of after a while just, you know, that's James or that's Pip. That's just the way they operate, and they give you that space. So, yeah, absolutely. Early on, though, I think it is a way to stick around sort of a network of people who are in a similar situation, I guess.
I totally agree. And all the beautiful stuff you provide, James, I just think that, you know, that is also helpful, you know, where people can hear about other people's stories and what other people have done.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we're sort of here, is really having people like yourself on the show and really, you know, getting to the nuts and bolts of it all. And hopefully, you know, this, you know, really big audience we're having now listening in, and we're going up and up in the iTunes rating, all those sorts of things. But it's really helping people, you know, take themselves to the next level. And it is super to have you on. Now, Pip, I was just realizing I've got so much here we could talk about, but we're sort of, you know, coming towards the sort of later parts of this chat because we could talk forever. But I sort of want to cover a couple more things. If we could just talk a little bit to me about Matrix Therapies. Obviously, you were one of the instigators right in the start of that, and how that can really help people take their lives forward.
Yeah, well, basically, Matrix Therapies looked at the fact that sometimes when people have a core issue like a lack of self-esteem or not good enough or not worthy or feeling unlovable, they're kind of the major core issues that people have. That that there's a matrix of things holding that in place. So a lack of self-esteem, for instance, you know, part of that could be, say, the influence of your mother. Maybe she was very, very critical and nothing was ever good enough. And then maybe your dad had really low self-esteem and that might have been influencing you. And then maybe, you know, your brother bullied you or picked on you or whatever, and that was having an effect on you. And then maybe there were some things at school, you know, where maybe you didn't get very good marks or something like that, and that affected you. So I called it matrix therapies because I saw that there was a matrix of different things that might hold a core issue in place. And sometimes people get frustrated because they feel like, I've done so much work on this issue and it's still not shifting fully. Like, you know, there's a few changes in some areas of my life, but it's fundamentally not shifting. And I really wanted to help people understand the structure of what was affecting them and be able to pull out those structures. So basically, matrix therapies has its core technique, which is called negative influence clearing. So it looks at those negative influence, mum, dad, and it, you know, your parents could be really great to you and love you heaps and still be a negative influence on relationships and money, for instance. And then, you know, the influence of perhaps siblings and the position that you are in the sibling area. And then also negative emotions, so anger, sadness, fear, guilt, shame, frustration. All of these negative emotions take up energy that could be pushed towards you getting what you want, but is, you know, creating a whole kind of drama in your life. So it's really important to be able to clear those. And then also negative beliefs about yourself, about other people, about business, about money, about relationships. All of these things become part of this matrix that holds something in place and can prevent you from doing what you want to do. So I wanted to help people see how these structures sit there and to give them a one-stop shop where they could clear out all of those influences and then be able to really lift their self-esteem in a way that gives them the confidence to be successful in all areas of their life. So, yeah, so there's the negative influence clearing, negative emotions clearing, negative beliefs clearing in there. And then there's also sort of looking at resources. So, I, you know, because I've done a lot of different courses of other people's and saw lots of different processes. And I saw that sometimes there's a lot of clearing, but there's not kind of a looking at, well, what do I want instead? There's goal setting. But how do I get the resources to have that? So, you know, you might clear low self-esteem, but you may not know, but how do I be confident? So there's a process that I do where we look at confidence as an archetype. So if you think of the knight as an archetype, you know, that's a very confident archetype. And we look at being able to step into that and really taking on the resources of the knight to get goals achieved and to move forward and to take action. So there's a bunch of different archetypes that we use as resources that people can step into. So that's kind of matrix therapies. There's shyness processes as well to help with that. There's even dream analysis, because sometimes we can have a dream and we just keep remembering it. We wonder what it means. And there's a whole new approach to goal setting as well that we do that I call goal evolution. And then there's that's matrix therapies. And then I also created this field called archetypal coaching. And in archetypal coaching, we look at passion and purpose and how to discover your passion and purpose. We also look at masculine and feminine. So a lot of people these days are wondering, well, you know, with all the 1950s stereotypes kind of done and dusted, what does it mean to be a man and what does it mean to be a woman in our modern day? And if I'm a woman, do I have to be feminine? If I'm a man, do I have to be masculine? Or can I embrace my own combination of masculinity and femininity? And what does that mean for me in my life? So we have a course around that and understanding that. And then I've just written a book. It's going to be published at the end of October, and it's called The 8 Principles of Achievement, Love and Happiness. So we also look at those 8 principles, and those 8 principles are part of 22 principles of success. So there's then the 7 principles of growth and the 7 principles of transformation, which is later books that I'm going to be writing. But I have a course that covers those whole 22 principles, and we go on residential retreat to look at them all, and we even do horse whispering. Yep. As a part of it. Yeah, which is really exciting because horses really reflect back to us a lot of what's going on inside unconsciously. So yeah, so that's kind of what we do. So where there's two fields, matrix therapies and archetypal coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got them marked down here. I think Pip, we're definitely going to have to get you back on the show at some stage and we'll be able to really go further into those. I just sort of actually, just on your books and your courses, what is the best place that people can sort of find your books and find out a bit more about you and hopefully take part in your courses across that you run?
Yeah, sure. Well, we've got my website, which is www.pipmckay.com.au. Now, we do have an old website called Evolve Now that it's just because of its ratings. We're just looking at how I can make sure I don't lose my Google ratings as we change that site because it's not responsive to other things. So when you plug in Pip Mckay, if you just Google search Pip Mckay, you might see the Evolve Now site. That's our old site. Look for the one that is Pip Mckay. The URL is actually Pip Mckay. And when you look on there, there's all kinds of interesting things. If you sign up to my newsletter there, you can find the eight archetypes of passion and purpose there. And also too, I'll soon be having my book out, which we're going to have a launch promoting it for just 99 cents, because we want it to become an Amazon bestseller. So that'll be coming up quite soon. And if you just get my tips in there, then you'll be able to get that book for just 99 cents. And then there's lots of YouTube stuff on there. You can come to my YouTube channel. There's hundreds of YouTube clips on all kinds of incredible things, like love versus codependence, and all sorts of strategies to help you in terms of learning and all kinds of other things. And we've got a webinar coming up quite soon as well, which is about how to write a speech in 20 minutes. So there's all kinds of things going on. There's all sorts of stuff that people can find on that website. But the best thing is just to sign up to the newsletter there.
Awesome, fantastic. So folks, if you're listening, make sure you jump on there and really sign up, because Pip's got some amazing resources for you guys to really help you out. Pip, final couple of questions. If you could pass on three pieces of advice, just three things that people could just, if they take away from this chat today and apply it to themselves, that could really push them forward into a better self, what are three things that you would say and pass on?
Well, one of the things my mum said to me, which has just been a whole motto of my whole life, she just said, do what you love and the money will come. And so I've lived by that all my life and it's been amazing. The thing is though, that in order to make money from what you love, you need to creatively solve problems. So, you know, if you have something that you love, you know, it may be that just the way that you think about it, you might not be able to take that to market. But really thinking about what problems what you love to do solves, and really approaching it in that way, and then giving that to the market. I think also too that, you know, a lot of people, when they want to follow their passion, they forget about what their talents are. And I always say to people that purpose is the marriage of your passion and your talents. So, you know, if you've got a hobby, you've got to make sure you've got a talent for that if you're going to turn that into a career.
Yeah.
A lot of people just have their talent in their work that they get paid for, and then they have a passion that is a hobby. But find a way to combine your passion with your talent, because that's really what your purpose is. So, yeah, that's pretty much my three pieces of advice.
Fantastic. Final little question. Three books that you would recommend all the listeners to get a hold of. Obviously, list your books first would be fantastic, and then maybe three other books that you would recommend.
Okay, well, so I've got my books, the Eight Principles of Achievement, Love and Happiness, which is coming out soon. And then I've got another book, which I've got a chapter in, which is called Great Success Coaches Exposed, which is a Dale Beaumont compilation, where I've got a chapter in that. And then there's also Millionaire Motivators. I've got a chapter in that book as well. So they're my three books that I would recommend from myself. But in terms of other books, I mean, I'm quite eclectic in what I'm interested in. And there's a book called The Soul's Code, by Dan Hillman. He's he used to be a Jungian psychologist, and he looks at this idea that we're born with a purpose and that our soul leaves clues about that purpose in what we love to do, and that it's about a matter of decoding the soul. I love that book, and a lot of my work in finding passion and purpose is based on that book, and I really love that. Another book that I love is called The Wisdom of the Enneagram. The Enneagram looks at childhood patterns and how our ego has become developed around those childhood patterns, such as, you know, pleasing, peacemaking, you know, over studying because you feel like you have to know everything based, you know, before you can do anything. There's basically 9 patterns in the Enneagram that look at how we respond to our childhood and the patterns that we create that then can hamper us in the future. And I think that's a really fantastic book by Don Richard Rizzo and Russ Hudson. And then the final book is The Dictionary of Etymology. I love this book. It tells you the history of words. And I think sometimes, you know, we feel like we're miscommunicating, and that's just because a word has embedded in it a number of different meanings. So, for example, the word flirt, once upon a time that just meant to flit like a butterfly from one flower to another. So a lot of people enjoy flirting because they have that meaning. But then in Victorian times, to flirt meant to deceive. And some people think flirting is deceptive. And so you can see those two meanings in that word with the different people's responses to the concept of flirting. It's actually in the word itself. But the other word that I love so much is that in the 12th century, the word freedom and the word love meant the same thing. And it came from common marriage. And it was this idea that when you love someone, you're free to make love with them. And so this is where the word freedom came from. So I think it's interesting that a lot of people feel like, you know, they can't love and be free at the same time. But if you do find the right person for you, then in actual fact, loving that person enhances your freedom to fulfill your potential.
They sound like very good books. I'm going to have to get my hands on those ones as well. So, no, that sounds fantastic. And, Pippa, I guess we'll have to wrap it up there, coming towards basically the end of the show. I really want to acknowledge you for coming on this show, and I really appreciate your time. Acknowledge you for all the amazing work you're doing, and you're helping so many people live their lives with more passion, with more purpose, and really just take themselves to the next level and more happiness overall. So I really want to thank you for that.
And thank you so much, James. I really loved being on your show, and I really love the work you're doing as well. And this huge, you know, you're becoming you're the influencing factor, because obviously, you know, it's gaining more traction and more people are following you. And I think that's just such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's people like you who make this show so fantastic. So thank you very much. And hopefully we can catch up again soon and chat some more.
Love to. Thanks, James.
Hi, isn't she fantastic? Man, I learned a lot from that, and just sitting back there and listening to her, you know, talk about, you know, the real things that are really going to make a difference in your life, in my life, in anyone's, but she is so fantastic. So I really hope you enjoyed it, and let me know what you thought. Like, this is for you, and I really would love to get some feedback from you guys. So make sure you jump on to Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook pages, all under Elite Team Leadership. Basically follow me on though, and let me know your thoughts, and shout out, and maybe even recommend who I should get on next time, and really make sure, if you want Pip to come back on, you know, let me know, because I'll make sure it happens for you guys. And so yeah, let me know. Hope you love that stuff, and man, we have got some absolute golden guests coming on our show in the coming weeks, so you got to stick around, check them out as they come out each week on the JockX podcast show. So enjoy, have a great week, and see you next time. Cheers.